I will introduce our panelists, and then they are going to each take a couple of minutes to say something about Governor Pritzker's first legislative session. We've built this program Win, Lose, or Draw, Pritzker's first legislative session. I'll begin by introducing Amanda Vinicky to my immediate right, and she's going to focus her comments on gambling and legalized marijuana. If you don't know Amanda, she's the Springfield correspondent and a mainstay for WTTW, our public broadcasting station in Chicago. She spent a decade as State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, NPR. She has garnered headlines and honors from the Chicago Headline Club, the AP, the Association of Capital Reporters and Editors. She's a graduate of the University of Illinois Springfield's Political Affairs Reporting Program, which is known nationwide. I'm sure she'll be glad to mention that, as will Daisy. She holds degrees in journalism and politics from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Little aside, Amanda, my college roommate is visiting from Arizona with his wife. They're both U of I graduates. We went down to Champaign-Urbana Friday. Doesn't look anything like it looked in the 1960s, I'll tell you that.
It's different from when I went there, too.
I know. Okay. She hails from LaGrange, Illinois, but now is a Chicago resident. And anybody who has recommendations for distinctive restaurants, places, or events, send it on to Amanda.
Please.
Okay. Our second panelist is Mr. Taman Bradley. And Taman's going to focus in on budget issues. He's a graduate of Rich Central High School in the South Suburbs, although he was born in Chicago. Attended Howard University, where he got his degrees. He anchors the WGN Evening News and WGN News at 9 on Saturdays and Sundays. He is WGN's political reporter. Before joining the WGN family, Taman was the former ABC News correspondent based out of Washington, D.C., where he covered breaking news for the network's affiliate service. He's been with WGN since July of 2015 and reports on a lot of issues that impact Chicago, schools, police, and much more. He has interviewed former Governor Rauner, former Governor Mayor Rahm Emanuel, and the viral story on Ethan the Shirtless Jogger, which you may have to tell us about. And then, to Taman's right is Daisy Contreras, who reports for NPR Illinois, currently in Springfield. She graduated from the Public Affairs Reporting Master's Degree Program at the U of I in Springfield. She's worked for the Chicago Reporter. She has an associate degree in French language, so you could be bilingual with her, a bachelor's degree in communications from IIT, the Illinois Institute of Technology, and she attended Lane Tech High School, and she's so smart that she brought her sister with her today, Maria Contreras, who's an electrical engineer and not a reporter. Okay, so we're ready to begin. The first legislative session for Governor J.B. Pritzker, win, lose, or draw. Who's going to start?
All right, okay. Let's do it. First of all, good afternoon. Thank you for having us. It's truly an honor to be up here. I'm used to being in the media area in the back where the food arrives cold and we fight for it. Good to be
but
up here.
But we're thankful, nonetheless.
Very, very thankful. Good to be up here as well with Daisy and Amanda. So I'm going to quickly try to run through the budget with some highlights. But, of course, we have to set up how we got here. The legislature passed a budget and did so on time for Illinois. That's actually an accomplishment. Governor Rauner, you might recall, and the Democratic-controlled legislature feuded for 736 days. Illinois did not have a budget. Essential services were funded. Some state vendors got paid through court orders, but it was an awful way to do business and an embarrassment to the state. It caused destruction to state schools and social service providers. Also, the state bill backlog grew and our credit rating dropped. So summer of 2019, some Republicans joined Democrats to override Governor Rauner's veto and to pass a budget. That budget included a tax hike, as you might recall. We went from 3.75% to 4.95%. The corporate tax rate went from 5.25% to 7%. On his final try, in his last year in office, Governor Rauner passed a budget, but it did not include his pro-business reforms, and there was little work done to address the state's long-term issues. So last November, Illinois elected a new governor and gave Democrats a supermajority in the legislature. And so we got a budget. We got it done on time, barely. Almost missed the deadline. In fact, they went in overtime to handle some aspects of it, and we'll get to the infrastructure spending and other portions. But I can tell you that this budget is balanced, okay, and that can be a political term to say the budget is balanced. There's not always agreement about that, but in this case, we have Democrats and Republicans who agree that the budget is balanced. Kind of a journey to get there. We learned in early, or we learned when Governor Rauner was sworn in, and he opened the books, that there was a $3.2 billion budget deficit. In May, the state found some extra cash, $1.5 billion. And in the end, $850 million was used to plug a budget hole. So where did the money come from? Performance of the stock market, elimination of federal, state, and local tax deductions, and better federal reimbursements for Medicaid. So some of that was in the Republican tax bill that passed. And so we should probably tell President Trump, because he would tweet how great he was able to help Illinois. So economists, though, do caution that there are still signs the economy could slow down, and Illinois is not as prepared as other states. Also, the budget hole was plugged by an MCO assessment, a tax on managed care organizations. I will spare you the details of that. I don't fully understand it myself. Other revenue, a tax amnesty program authorizing a marketplace facilitator, improve online sales tax collection, and an e-cigarette tax. So all of this, those measures to plug that hole were signed through separate legislation so that Governor Pritzker and Republicans could say that no taxes were raised in this budget, even though spending increased. It's a $40 billion spending plan. So in overtime, the Senate approved the budget 40 to 19, the House 83 to 35. Last week, Governor Pritzker signed it. It'll go into effect July 1st, the beginning of the 2020 fiscal year. So just quickly, I want to run through some highlights. It increases the evidence-based K through 12 funding by $378.6 million. Now, lawmakers say this boost will help local school districts and perhaps taxpayers, property tax owners will get some relief if schools choose to do that because of them increasing the money. There's an increase in funding for public universities. Again, they were battered during the budget stalemate, $52.8 million. Increase in MAP funding, that's to help low-income students. Funds two state police cadet classes. Now, pensions are fully funded. The governor had a plan to lower pension payments, but he does meet $9.1 billion in pension payments for fiscal year 2020, and it extends the current pension buyout system for three more years. $230 million appropriated for a new Illinois veterans home. The unions got some money they were owed from the budget stalemate. DCFS, which has been in the news a lot lately, got $89 million. They're going to be able to hire 301 additional staff and increase rates of service providers by 5%. It also allows money to retire some of the state's bill backlog, $1.2 billion in borrowing. Our bill backlog is $6.7 billion. A couple controversial items quickly. A taxpayer protection against so-called pension teacher pension spiking was removed. So that's back in there. Also, lawmakers gave themselves a pay raise, $1,600 or 2.4%. That takes effect July 1st. Now, Democrats, who of course had supermajorities in the governor's office, wanted Republican votes, and so there was some back and forth about getting those votes. And so the House Republican leader, Jim Durkin, was able to secure some business reforms, creation of the Blue Collar Jobs Act, creation of a data center tax incentive, as well as some other measures. So I just wanted to say that on the Friday, on deadline Friday, so that would have been the 31st, the budget magically appeared out of thin air at 1 o'clock. That's how Springfield does business. Reporters were scrambling to read what was in it. I asked every source I had for a fact sheet and actually never got a fact sheet on deadline day. That is just how things operate. And so the legislature enacted the $40 billion spending plan a couple hours later. And I'm sure not many of our lawmakers, our representatives, read all 1,500 pages, but that is how things go in Springfield.
Thank you, Taman. Amanda, who's up next?
I can go next.
Daisy, okay.
Is my mic on? Yes? Okay, good. Wonderful to be here. Thank you again for inviting me. So as someone who has only covered the legislature for 3 years, two of those years under the Rauner administration, where, as Taman just mentioned, we really didn't have a substantial budget. And I think, you know, during my time there, the biggest piece of legislation that was bigger than the budget was the school funding formula overhaul. And so if you asked anyone in Springfield, especially the veteran political reporters or anyone who watches state government very closely, you know, this was a very unusual session in the sense of the many things that were tackled in one session, and also the just how unusual it was that you couldn't tell until the very last minute how things were going to turn out. Again, budget was not unveiled until 1 p.m. Friday, the day of deadline. So I think one of the things or two items that people are talking about still, apart from the budget being on time and legalizing recreational marijuana, is the infrastructure plan and the massive gaming expansion bill. So there's this $45 billion infrastructure plan that touches on a lot of things communities across the state have been wanting for many years. This is the first capital plan in over a decade, and for many, it's a decent start for a lot of the projects that they've been holding on off for many years. And so in order to pay for it, lawmakers had to let go of a lot of things that they wanted personally in order to be able to fund these projects. And, I mean, for something as big as this to go through, that needed to happen, to have bipartisan support. And so this infrastructure bill has funding for vertical and horizontal construction projects, vertical for maintenance of state-owned buildings like prisons and universities, and horizontal money for maintaining roads, bridges, and transportation projects, mass transportation projects, among other things. Most notable in the plan is how is the state going to pay for all of this? There is an increase in the gas tax, which the last capital bill did not include. It has now been doubled to 38 cents, and it is set to increase with inflation over time in order to keep up with the rising costs of construction and to maintain the roads. The diesel fuel tax is another example that also increased 5 cents and also tied with inflation. And one very interesting thing for me as a journalist watching this, tied to this capital plan is the expansion of gambling across the state. The licensing fees from the 6 new casinos and from legalizing sports betting and the increase in video gaming taxes will go toward funding the vertical projects, maintaining buildings. The gaming expansion bill was pretty much the revenue component to this part of the capital plan. And so if lawmakers, for example, wanted money for their university buildings in their towns, they would have to accept this gaming expansion bill. And if you wanted a casino in your city, or if you were all for legalizing sports betting, then you needed to take a vote in favor of raising the vehicle registration tax and raising the tax on tobacco. So everything was tied together, and I think that was could be a good plan, I don't know, depending on how everything plays out as we see how everything plays out in the future. Now, this wasn't the case in the beginning where everything was tied together. Sports betting was supposed to be an item on its own. In the past, gaming expansion proposals did not get as much support from many lawmakers, so it didn't really pass out of the legislature in many instances. So in the beginning, it really made no sense to bundle all of these items together. There's this saying that something as big as this becomes like a Christmas tree, and if you keep putting stuff on it, eventually it'll fall over on its own weight. And that's what a lot of people were thinking about, that, you know, if you bundle these things together, it's not going to work out. Pritzker originally wanted sports betting licensing fees to go toward his budget, and that's what he proposed in his budget proposal in February. And he wanted over $200 million to go toward that budget. And I think it was a source of revenue that many lawmakers were very in favor of. And as negotiations continued and as they heated up over April and May, there was pressure building as Iowa and Indiana legalized sports betting. So I think lawmakers were like, okay, so how are we going to get this through? How are we going to make sure that Governor Pritzker gets what he wants? And how, you know, do we make sure that we get in on this money come football season in later on in the year? But as we saw at the end, lawmakers risked it all, and with this heavy Christmas tree, and it held up. So again, yes, we didn't see the plan for this capital thing and the gaming until the afternoon of the 31st. And as a journalist, it would have helped to kind of see this a lot earlier, so that we weren't like in committee going through the 700 pages and seeing like, okay, in this gaming bill, there's also sports betting. Go down 400 pages and see what that includes. I think one of the greatest criticisms this year was the lack of transparency, in that sense that we as journalists and people, the public, did not really get a chance to weigh in on what the final things looked like for the gaming bill being attached to the revenue to capital. Negotiations happened up until the very last minute. There was a big danger of it falling apart that evening on Friday. I know that from what I've heard from talking to many different sources, that Governor Pritzker was very much involved in the background trying to get lawmakers from both sides to agree on this, to get enough votes to pass this through. I know that Mayor Lightfoot was not in favor of having sports betting at certain venues in the city. So that was one of like the biggest things that everybody was just kind of holding their breath, like, okay, is this going to happen? Are we going to be able to vote on this weekend? So I think, as a journalist with 3 years of experience covering state government, this was just very, you got to watch everything as it was happening. You didn't know when you were going to go home to sleep, or if your story, you know, you write up a draft and you don't know if it's going to change in the next hour or two.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Well,
thank you very much, Daisy. Thank you. And now, Amanda?
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Win, lose, or draw, I would say that, in a sense, I'm going to cop out there, it's too early to make that judgment call. Just as we have been dining and talking, there was a hearing on the Obama Presidential Center. From what I gather, by kind of cheating and quickly looking at my phone, we're going to get a decision from a federal judge in that case tomorrow. That's something that could bring monumental change to the city of Chicago. And so much that occurred this session could drastically alter the landscape of our city and our state, particularly when it comes to vices, which, the ones that I'm going to talk about are not my particular vices of choice. I like that I got this topic. Fun one to expound on a little, versus taxes. But something to keep in mind about all of this is that, as you have seen the first year under Governor J.B. Pritzker described, often it is seen as, quote, productive, which I think is true for all of the reasons that we just talked about and for those that I will speak to. We need to be clear that productive is not synonymous with positive. It merely means that a lot got done. So whether that be a description by journalists or what have you, something to very much keep that in mind. When it comes to the vices, though, we will speak about, for starters, Illinois. Evidently, City Club's going to have a big pot party on January 1st. You're not alone. A lot of people, I think, will be...
this whole city could go up in smoke.
lots of token. When marijuana becomes legal in the state of Illinois. And that certainly is something that could bolster the budget. Again, to my earlier point, something that could change the landscape of the city. I frankly just went to Denver about a month or so ago. I mean, I had been previously to cover a political convention. There's a lot of pot everywhere, stores, shops. We're going to see a drastic change potentially in the state, although it is fairly refined now once you see that industry take off. Why did that happen under Pritzker? His first year in office, a rookie governor with relatively no political experience, though certainly involved in politics for his whole life. I think part of that is just the perception of pot has changed. Nationally, other states have already done it. It is no longer seen as quite the vice that it once was, particularly in Illinois, because the medical marijuana program, which had been, actually, and still is just a pilot, though legislation will be headed to Pritzker to make that also permanent. That had been so tightly regulated in Illinois that even critics like law enforcement, who were very hesitant, said, hey, you know, it's okay. This is working out all right. Chicago didn't look like Denver. Illinois didn't look like Colorado. So that, I think, gave very much an opening. Also, you had had a lot of buildup to marijuana's legalization in Illinois. This was not brand new legisation, not even just this year where there was a series of hearings. It had been something that legislators really were working on from even prior to the introduction of the medical marijuana package. So it was, again, some time for not only the public, but also for political actors to adjust. Further, Pritzker had campaigned on it. This was something that was discussed in gubernatorial debates during the 2018 election. So everybody had kind of had time to, once again, absorb what was going on. And it wasn't as if you had a governor who'd been in for a term and then suddenly there's a bill and he's got to react to it. He had said from the onset and was elected with the promise that he was going to make marijuana legal. And then further, it was carefully vetted legislation that gave kind of something to everybody. Law enforcement had their way, you know, and so did African-American legislators in particular, who said that the war on drugs had really ruined and been targeted and hurt their communities the most. There were elements in this package that gave each group something to take away from and sell to their constituents. To that end, that is similarly, in my opinion, why you saw this massive gambling expansion passed. As Daisy noted, there had often been this talk of a Christmas tree that topples under its own weight. In this case, I mean, talk about a heavily loaded Christmas tree. This was like more ornaments and the biggest star that you could possibly put. This was huge. And I haven't totaled up the numbers, but say like double previous casino expansion plans that had been put before the Illinois legislature. Why this one didn't topple, perhaps, is because it looked a little more like, I don't know, the Christmas tree that's in the walnut room at Marshall Fields. And I'm still calling it that. But they built it up. There was something for everyone. You didn't see casinos fight it quite as hard because they were able to get in and get a bit of an advantage on sports betting online. You saw suddenly horse race tracks on board because they were going to become racinos. They weren't fighting against the casinos. Everybody got something. The downstate in terms of southern Illinois, which is for sure desperate, more so than many pockets that we're used to up here for economic development, is getting a casino. So that was part of it. And again, people had had time to adjust. We have video gaming terminals. You don't see them so much in the city of Chicago, but they are everywhere. So the perception had changed for that, and in general, we're just in a different sort of time and place. Gambling, casinos that had once been seen as this, you know, evil vice are no longer viewed as such by the majority of the public. It's not, per se, a death sentence or a political death sentence, that is, for a legislator to go along and vote for this, as it once would have perhaps been. So that is, in my opinion, by how part of this all occurred. I guess in terms of the opposite of a vice, Illinois will now be, as was noted, punishing smokers a bit more in terms of a higher tax on cigarettes. From my understanding, part of that and why that was implemented as part of the funding for the infrastructure program was because so many other tax options had been taken off the table by this point in time. The money had to come from somewhere and not just gambling. So notions of a tax on streaming video on Netflix that really would have been visible to a broader public and perhaps been punishing, again, to politicians come election time. Even though a gas tax sounds awful, many people probably don't know. Like, you know, when gas is, when the price of gas goes up or down, you don't know whether that's because of something that OPEC is doing, the economy, a gas tax. So it was less visible. And also, so that's in terms of the gas tax. I'm sorry. The cigarette tax, similarly, that was something that Cullerton wanted. Senate President John Cullerton has been a fierce advocate of trying to get people to stop smoking. And while this is a revenue stream, it is also a way to get people to quit. So I think that is why part of those were incorporated in the final package. I have lots of thoughts, and I don't know how long I've been talking because I could clearly go for a long time. But
there's no pledge night here tonight, so
I can go. Okay. I want to leave plenty of time for questions, but I will say that in terms of the notion of this as a discussion in terms of Governor J.B. Pritzker himself and what role he did or did not play in this, I think part of why this was able to happen, again, part of what I had just said, but Pritzker did most certainly play a role. The governor is likable, and not just in terms of the typical way of, you know, shaking hands with members of the public. By and large, it seems like members of the General Assembly like and trust him. Further, they were ready for a breath of fresh air for something different after the years of impasse after Governor Bruce Rauner. Including Republicans. The Rauner years were very difficult for them. You saw a lot of partisan infighting within the GOP. You will continue to see that. But at a time after so much had stalled, it was like there was bottled up energy ready to burst out. People wanted to pass measures. They wanted it done big. That was to Pritzker's advantage. And frankly, he took advantage of that advantage, and he ran with it. He came in with an agenda. So, like I had said in terms of promising the legalization of marijuana, much of what he had done, he campaigned on. It wasn't a stealth campaign that all of a sudden, hey, wait, we elected you, and now what? People knew what they were getting into, and that made it more difficult. That made it easier, that is, for legislators to get on board. They had a governor who had been popularly elected. A governor who, by the way, has tons of dough, tons of cash. So did Rauner before him, of course. And Rauner had sort of used it as a threat. Pritzker doesn't need to. I mean, I've tried asking legislators, do you feel like he's going to use it against you if you're not on board? They said, no, 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 no. I don't think that needs to be spoken. In fact, perhaps it's the opposite. However, the governor's money, as it did in the 2018 election, could very well be used to help his supporters to further boost them if any of these measures backfire on them, backfire that quickly. He has the money, and he has shown that he is more than happy to funnel that into campaigns. That makes things a lot easier, as does House Speaker Michael Madigan being in a far weaker position than he has been in the past due to Me Too. He also, after the years of Rauner, I don't think that Madigan could be the naysayer that he has been in the past. He needed Democrats to get some wins on the board. He needed to look like he was not the obstacle. It was in his best interest to help pass Pritzker's agenda, a progressive agenda that more Democrats, members of his party, members of his caucus, wanted passed. Madigan, it's partially member management. He doesn't need to be elected statewide. He needs to be elected within the ranks of House Democrats. When they wanted this done, it's in his interest to help to make that happen. Just two quick points here. I would add also, of course, he had the Democrats to do it. There is, as Senate President Cullerton framed it, a super-duper majority of Democrats. And therefore, while there was a bipartisan agreement on the budget, you may well have seen Republicans fight a heck of a lot harder for more had they had any sort of ability to do so. They didn't have the numbers. They didn't have the power or the strength. Democrats did. This was something that they could get some wins out of, wins that Pritzker did not stand in the way of. He was amenable to working with business and had no problem with that. Said, in fact, as a businessman, he wanted to make that happen. But this was a heck of a lot easier for him. Unlike Rauner prior to him, who was dealing with GOP minorities, you had a governor that had super duper majorities of his own party to help get it done. And then also, as we talked about, that lack of transparency. Frankly, yes, that helped to get it all done. People who were looking for a change in how business is done in Springfield most certainly did not get that. This was done mostly backroom deals, perhaps less so than before because, as I've repeated several times now, the governor had campaigned on some of this. We knew it wasn't a surprise. So it's not as if the gambling package, the tax increases came out of nowhere. Nonetheless, this was not something that had been thoroughly vetted. When we talk about that it's hard for journalists to look through 1,500 pages, that's not a woe is me. That's because it is our job to tell you, the public, what is in some of these measures. And that, of course, is very difficult to do when, yes, even legislators themselves in many cases, they always are going to rely on staff. But when staff is scrambling to figure out what's in, what's out, what's changed minute by minute. So there you have it.
Thank you very much. Let's give our panelists a round of applause. And if anybody has any questions, you know, just write them down. Our staff will come around and pick them up. This is from Dave Lundy with Aileron. Dave, where are you? Right over there. He says, we know who the big winners were. Who are the biggest losers? Who would like to start us off on that tomorrow?
All right, I'll start us, and I'm sure the ladies will pick up because there are definitely some losers. One of the things we didn't touch on is, as you know, the legislature passed Governor Pritzker's graduated income tax. He calls it a fair tax, and so that will head to the voters in the November 2020 election. It'll be on the ballot. It is a question that must be authorized by residents of the state of Illinois. And what it does is raise taxes, takes us from our flat tax, 4.95%, and increases the rates going all the way up as high as 7.99%. That would be the new highest rate. If you make less than $100,000 a year, you actually get a small tax increase. If you make between $100,000 to $250,000 a year, your taxes will remain the same, 4.95%. But people making more than $250,000 a year, those rates continue to climb up. So there were two pieces to it. The first was passing legislation to simply institute the graduated income tax. The second component were those rates. And that was the most controversial part because Republicans say this opens the door for the legislature just over time to continually raise rates. There is absolutely no protection at any time. You know, we still have $134 billion in unfunded pension liabilities. The legislature will still want to spend on projects. And, you know, they're talking about now that they've done infrastructure, continuing infrastructure programs, so that it's not done every decade, so that it's an ongoing basis. So lawmakers like to spend. And so one of the losers in this are the wealthy, perhaps some of you in this room. Because if this is passed next November 2020, it opens the door to people who make more paying more.
Okay, Daisy, do you have any losers?
Next. Yeah, I mean, so many things happened during the last few weeks of session that sometimes we forget that Governor Pritzker signed a minimum wage increase earlier on in the year. And a lot of people will say that, yes, labor came out winning this year, but what about the businesses and small businesses that were lobbying really hard in Springfield against the $15 statewide minimum wage increase? A lot of small businesses in Springfield were very upset about this, saying that, you know, they could not afford a $15 minimum wage, but they could maybe do a graduated one, you know, maybe like different minimum wages across the state, depending on how costs of living were. Teacher shortage. I think that was one big issue that we heard a lot this year, and I don't think the Pritzker administration really focused on that this year. So again, we have 3 years left, and a lot of other issues like backlog of bills, pension issues, and other fiscal issues that we're still trying to struggle and come out of. So I think that's one that I can think of.
Amanda, do you have a couple
sure,
losers?
I'll just quickly say, yeah, I agree. Wealthy people, be on guard, be on notice. There's that. Again, minimum wage, so particularly downstate businesses where the economy is different than it is up here, especially if you're on a border town, if you're a retailer or a gas station that is on the border of Indiana, Missouri, Wisconsin, they will likely be hurting. Smokers, of course, hurting. Anybody who wanted action, true action on pensions is going to be there was a somewhat win in terms of the windfall and Pritzker not going forward with the, quote, pension holiday, pension, you know, skipping really a payment that was part of a larger plan. But there's a win there in terms of really tackling that in a more full-throated fashion. Those individuals are losers. Also, gun rights activists, to a degree, there was a gun control measure that Pritzker signed that had been passed by the previous General Assembly, but you did not see action on that front. It wasn't something that he had made one of his big points in his platform, but something that certainly one would assume under, again, super-duper Democratic majorities and a Democratic governor could have gone forward and did not.
Okay. So you mentioned some quote-unquote, rich people may be affected by this tax increase if it passes. And we have a couple questions that deal with that. One is from Dr. Yerkes, a City Club member with Oaklawn Dental. Doc Yerkes, where are you? Right over there. And also from the City Club's favorite accountant, Linda Foreman. Linda, thank you. Took care of all your corporate and personal people. Let them know about these next quarterly payments. That's why you're so relaxed today. Okay. Her question is, how can the Illinois deficit be paid for only by the remaining 3%? And then Yerkes and Foreman are on this, in parentheses, the ones who haven't left for Florida, Nevada, Arizona, and so forth. How are you going to keep the middle class from leaving Illinois in droves? So who would like to deal with that?
I could try to take a stab
at
that.
Go for it.
Maybe I'd run it for the legislature if I had an answer for that. There are some questions about whether or not people are running from the state and who's leaving, right? So there is a narrative that we are losing population. It is because taxpayers are tapped out. And there's no question that we have a lot of local taxing entities and all kinds of fees. We didn't even touch on the parking fee that was instituted to pay for the infrastructure. So if you park, like me in a high rise, it's already like $200. It's going to be like close to $300, right? So that's going up. So yes, there's no question that there are people who are concerned about our taxes, but also there's a Better Government Association study that shows it's not the wealthy who have been leaving, it's poorer communities who are hit hardest and also who were hit as our social services were stressed during the budget stalemate. So, look, there are... I can tell you from being down there at Springfield that final week that the lobbyists were smiling. They were grinning. Everybody won. As Amanda touched on, no, we have not had fundamental pro-business reforms. It is still a state that has left policies because it has supermajorities represented by Democrats in the legislature. But Governor Pritzker comes from the business community, and my sense is... he is willing to meet needs and the interests of business communities. You look at Leader Durkin. He was pleased with the reforms, some of the measures that he was able to secure for businesses that had come to him with a wish list. And so the governor didn't have to participate in any of that because the legislature could do whatever they wanted, but he wanted Republicans in the room negotiating and to strike a deal. It's a fascinating question. I think some of the social stuff could cause people to have concerns. You know, as Amanda mentioned, we are betting on vices. We don't know what the impact of recreational marijuana will be. As Colorado talks about, there's not a good test for law enforcement if you're behind the wheel. I mean, I don't want anybody high on the Dan Ryan. It's already difficult enough to drive on that thing. So And not to mention, you know, there are studies that show that, you know, as we build this super casino that we're going to have now in Chicago with the most gaming positions in the state, the money, that the revenue, the tax revenue that will be collected doesn't make up for the state spending to provide to people with gaming addictions and crime and the door that opens to corruption.
You know, Daisy or Amanda,
go ahead. Oh, I was just going to, in terms of who is going to leave, right now you have a very carefully crafted set of tax rates. Should the graduated income tax constitutional amendment be ratified by voters in 2020? It is crafted as a campaign message. Right now, yes, and like, I'm not playing into the Republicans' fears of they could raise taxes all the time on everybody. It'll be super easy. I'm not getting into that, nor am I. I will say that I think the notion of putting rates into a constitutional amendment is a silly one, that you'll hear Republicans suggest that. Would they actually want that? Probably not. Tax rates probably aren't meant to be enshrined in a constitution as an amendment, but nonetheless, a notion of more protection. Again, not getting into that. But what I'm saying is that the taxes as proposed are very carefully crafted so that they will hit millionaires, quote unquote, the most, because that is a message that resonates with voters. It is a message that resonates in sort of a class warfare sort of climate. Those could change. We don't know how long they will stay. Will people who are millionaires and therefore certainly have the ability to quite easily move, quote unquote, from Illinois? Maybe you keep a home here, but you get your taxes done in another state and say that you're a resident there. Might we see that happen? Because there is most certainly a significant jump for them, unlike for the majority of Illinoisans. I think the studies that we've seen in terms of who's leaving Illinois right now, and that is, again, lower income residents versus the higher income ones, do those hold up under these rates? We can't make that judgment from those studies. It is merely that those rates could even out some in the future. There's no guarantee of how long they will last. Again, they are crafted so that as a way to help sell the fair tax to the majority of Illinoisans who are very frightened about what it means to their income taxes and to all of the other taxes that are coming their way.
And I guess, you know,
Daisy,
go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to ask you about the gambling. 6 new casino licenses. Mm-hmm. Who's going to be going to these casinos? Isn't one like up in Waukegan?
It's true.
I mean, I don't know where in Chicago. Maybe you folks have some idea of the possible sites. Where are they going to get the people who go to these casinos to generate the revenue they hope to get?
A lot of people say that it's a saturated market. I don't know. And again, how it plays out, we will see. And who gets to, you know, build their casino within the next year. Tourism is a big thing that a lot of lobbying groups, a lot of labor groups were coming into Springfield to talk to legislators about. Let's build casinos. Let's make jobs for the middle class people here who want to stay in Illinois, who, again, are worried about how these maybe taxes are going to impact their bottom line. Again, minimum wage increase. That's one of the items as well that Pritzker talked about, and he continues to talk about. How do we help the middle class stay here, live well, raise their wages, create jobs, have money to train a better workforce? So I think, you know, a lot of those things we didn't really hear about during the Rauner administration. It was mostly this narrative of people are leaving Illinois, the high taxes are driving people out. Very different under the Pritzker administration. So, yes, to your question, who's going to go there? Well, I think the idea is to try to bring tourists into Illinois to help pay for a lot of those things.
Okay. Another question that we have here, getting away from taxes and leaving. This is from Ed Miller at the Joyce Foundation. The proposed Clean Energy Jobs Act and most other energy legislation didn't come up for a vote this spring. Do you think major energy legislation will be on the table during the veto session? Why or why not?
I'll go.
Okay, Amanda.
I do. I expect that it will be, whether it will pass or not, I certainly cannot say, but there is certainly a lot of ba-dum-ching energy. Come on, guys, right? there is a lot of energy in that sector, a lot of interests lobbying entities, various organizations from the environmental standpoint, and then ComEd, who of course are the big guns, that maybe we're willing to take a step back given both the complexity of that legislation as well as the massive agenda measures that were more immediate pressures in terms of the budget, things that, again, this very well-liked and embraced governor by Springfield had wanted as his priorities. So that didn't necessarily come to the forefront. And when you have these major other pieces of legislation passing, legislators are procrastinators, as we saw, as it was by going into overtime. So that just, you know, didn't quite cut it. But when with you have those now off the table, certainly it is not to say as if Illinois isn't facing more major issues. Again, bill backlog, pensions, guns, name it. They are outstanding, but there will be legislators themselves will have energy, more likely, come veto session or thereafter to take on that very complex issue.
One of the issues that has been talked about was property tax relief. And a task force has been appointed to look at that. As a retired academic, I've been on a lot of task force. I've got a lot of volumes on my bookshelf collecting dust. Nothing ever happens. Do you anticipate anything meaningful happening in the next year or so with this group that's involved, or is this just going to be another study group that doesn't amount to more than printed pages?
I mean, as journalists, I would say we don't really predict stuff. We really don't know what could happen. And again, you know, one of the biggest questions, I think, coming out of this session was, okay, we have three more years. What are we going to do? And, you know, once we start thinking about it, like, yeah, we have the pensions. We have the bill backlog. We have teacher shortage issues that we have to address. And so, yeah, maybe that is, you know, the next thing is people have seen maybe this first year was very productive. And like Amanda said, maybe not all positive because we don't know how everything's going to play out. Maybe that will give some people more energy or more confidence into tackling something as big as property taxes.
I've heard their meeting scheduled for the summer, but I mean, there have been several task force over the years, and the best hope was probably under Governor Rauner, but I don't want to make a prediction. I would expect, too, you'll hear a lot more about the boost in education funding, providing an opportunity for local taxing entities to provide some relief. You're going to hear that Democratic talking point probably a lot going forward, rather than something larger. That way they can say, oh, we did do something for property tax as we continue to study it.
One of the reasons that property tax quote-unquote relief, or at least dealing with that issue in a fulsome manner, hasn't been done is because it is so complicated. It's a local, those taxes pay for local needs. The state would certainly need to step up in terms of paying more for education, presumably, if you're going to be able to lessen property taxes. With Illinois' fiscal climate right now, the, you know, state budget disasters that we've seen, that's of course a hard thing for the state to do. But could it happen? Maybe, because guess what? It would be smart. Again, particularly as the governor is trying to sell a, quote-unquote, as he terms it, fair tax, this graduated income tax to voters, something that would help him to make his case would be giving voters relief in terms of something that is more recognizable to them, likely, in terms of getting those property tax bills in the mail, paying your mortgage, that's less obvious as people just, you know, your income taxes are taken out of a paycheck that's presumably direct deposit. Property taxes are far more obvious to a lot of people. So it would be wise for both, and something else that is helping it, again, the complication part hurts it, but what is helping something perhaps to finally move on property taxes is both how big of an issue it is, especially in Cook County, where it's going to become an even more large issue because of changes under the new Cook County assessor into the formula, but also people from both parties want it. This isn't a Democrat or Republican thing. There's anger that is widespread.
Speaking of property tax relief and assessment of that, Assessor Kagi had certain things he wanted the legislature to enact in terms of changing the assessment process. And he met very stiff resistance from the real estate industry, business, et cetera. But Kagi said he'll be back again. Is this going to be an ongoing battle in your estimation?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that it will be an ongoing issue because people are going to rise up and get more and more bothered. We have already seen it happen in Evanston, where new changes are taking place in terms of how property is valued, assessed, and then that what that means for tax bills, for businesses and for individuals alike. So that is something that we could see more people paying attention to. And again, it's a matter of how much can the legislature tackle. I'm not saying that he will necessarily win. There had been changes made to the legislation. Businesses were less bothered with it than they had been initially, but they're still not happy. But that is something that is not going to certainly go away.
And then one last question. Mayor Lightfoot came down to Springfield, worked both sides of the aisle, met with the governor, and that. Could you offer any thoughts about her role in getting things out of Springfield for the city of Chicago?
Well, she had a pretty big wish list, and you may recall all of the candidates for mayor pointed to Springfield as helping to address some of the city's needs because, frankly, Chicago taxpayers are tapped out with all various types of taxes and fees. And so all of the candidates for mayor talked about wanting revenue, wanting some assistance from Springfield. And that casino could indeed be a big boost. You know, we had right during the middle of negotiations, and as we touched on earlier, the final legislation of bills appear on right before they're going to be voted on, and then you learn the details. And so we'd learned about what was a so-called McPeer tax, increasing the tax on bars and restaurants to fund a new building at McCormick Place, and the mayor said, "Wait a minute, let's not do that, not so fast." And apparently, there was some dialogue with Governor Pritzker because ultimately she came on board with it, or did it die?
I think it died.
So she got that killed. But there was another example where she came on board with something after talking to Governor Pritzker. So she was relevant. She was not in Springfield as this was going on, but there was back and forth, and she was able to step in and get that tax killed.
Very good. Any final comment from either Daisy or Amanda?
Yeah, I mean, adding to that, I think that especially with the gaming bill, that there was dialogue between Pritzker and Mayor Lightfoot when she wasn't happy with one bit of the provision in the bill that allowed sports betting inside certain sporting venues. And so I think they came overnight. I guess they talked about it, and she's like, okay, I understand what it means now.
Places like Wrigley and Soldier Field.
Yeah,
and this kind of dialogue didn't exist with Mayor Emanuel or Governor Rauner, even though they shared dude ranches together and wine bottles and so on.
I don't think that was fake animosity toward the end there. I think that got real. My final comments, just to sort of wrap things up here, would be that, again, really want to drive home, because I think it can be misconstrued that, again, productive does not mean positive. It doesn't mean not positive. It doesn't mean negative. They just merely are not synonyms. I would also say that, you know, passing a budget, it was termed by Governor Pritzker to be a watershed. I think the bipartisanship that you saw at the end of Springfield was certainly different than it has been these past 4 years. And even to a degree, you saw a lot of conflict in Springfield under Governors Quinn and Blagojevich because of their poor relationships with the legislature. But getting a budget on time, one that is ostensibly or even close to balanced, should not be a watershed or thought of as such. That is literally the basic function of government, to pass something along those lines. So I would say don't let your politicians off that easy or what have you. That is not should not be considered a watershed moment.
Let's give all of our panelists, Daisy and Amanda and Tamana, a big hand.